Hey, what it do, sports fans? Welcome to the Sports Live podcast brought to you by Multimedia Live. I'm Sboom Jikeliso, your host, and I will be joined by various guests on this exciting new podcast to discuss the latest ins and outs of the sporting world. Downstairs from the Tiso Blackstar Multimedia Studios, where this podcast is being recorded, the Zondo Commission, also known as the State Capture Inquiry, has passed more than 175 days of hearings. The inquiry into the events of the 24th of August involving Springbok lock Eben Etzebeth and an alleged violent and racial incident in Langebaan outside of Cape Town have only just begun. Etzebeth, who is with the Springboks at the Rugby World Cup in Japan, is being accused of accosting a man and calling him all sorts of racial slurs. It is also alleged that he pointed a firearm at some female patrons of an entertainment establishment in Langebaan. The case is being investigated by the National Prosecution Authority as well as the South African Human Rights Commission, who have confirmed that they have taken the matter to the Equality Court. Etzebeth's employers, SA Rugby, including Springbok Director of Rugby and Head Coach Rassie Erasmus, have stood by Etzebeth despite mounting calls that he should be recalled from Japan and face justice in South Africa. On Thursday night, on the eve of the Springboks' crucial Group B game against Italy, the community of Langebaan had an all-night meeting with the Human Rights Commission. The matter has only escalated in eminence, despite SA Rugby's attempts to sweep it under the rug. Parliamentary Sports Portfolio Committee Chairperson Beauty Dlulane released this statement as well on Thursday, and I will read out part of it. The matter could have been handled differently. SA Rugby and the Human Rights Commission should improve on dealing with matters of this nature. The approach in handling these matters should be corrective and not what appears to be media embarrassment of Mr. Etzebeth and a distraction to South Africa's participation at the Rugby World Cup. End quote. Springbok captain Siya Kolisi said at a press conference in Japan that the saga had not affected the atmosphere in the team. Etzebeth himself has denied the claims. This is a special Sports Live episode looking into Eben Etzebeth and the saga that has engulfed South African rugby. Now we're joined in the conversation by the leader of the Khoisan Defiance campaign, Mr. Sammy Claassen, who has been very vocal in his stance that Eben Etzebeth should be recalled from the World Cup squad with the Springboks to come and clear his name in South Africa if indeed he is innocent, as is presumed by the law until proven guilty. Mr. Claassen, please tell us why you have taken the stand that you have taken, that Etzebeth should come back and come and face justice in South Africa.
Good morning to your listeners. Listen, this is not a personal stance per se. It is the community of Langebaan that has taken a stand. And we've taken a firm stand against racism. Racism in sport and in particular in rugby. Now, this case has angered the community of Langebaan because there's a narrative being spinned by Eben Etzebeth that there's no case, that the police have assured him that there's no case. And we now know that that was a blatant lie. Because at the time when he went public, telling SA Rugby, the coach, and the South African public that there's no case, there was a case number, there was an investigating officer appointed by the Langebaan police, and there were victims in hospital that needed medical attention. There was young ladies, 20-year-old colored ladies, that were allegedly being gun-pointed and threatened and traumatized to the point that they fear for their lives. That's why we took a stand to say that South Africa has got a serious problem with crime, especially violent crime that involves guns. Violent crimes that involves young women, children, and those most vulnerable sectors in our society. That's why South Africa needs to take a stand. It can't only be that Langebaan people of color are taking a stand and the rest of South Africa become spectators when our people are being assaulted, when there's criminal incidents taking place right in front of our doorsteps, and we are asked or requested to remain silent. It can't be. That's why it's important that we take a stand. Because this country has got a serious problem with crime. It's got a serious problem with inequality. It has a problem with murder. It has a problem with racism. And it seems every time that the racism issue and debate are being put on a national platform, there are forces trying to silence the debate. So we are very unhappy with SA Rugby. It is in particular with Mr. Mark Alexander, who is the leader and the president of SA Rugby. A black man coming from a colored community, who has failed that last night in the community meeting at a packed hall in front of the media in Langebaan. The colored and African people spoke out against this brutal assault and the racist connotation to the assault. We can't understand why SA Rugby allowed a player that has been implicated. In fact, a case has been opened up against him a month ago. There's two serious investigations underway. The criminal investigation and the case now with the Human Rights Commission and the Equality Court.
Yes.
So we can't understand why black leaders in Rugby are failing the colored people. So we are angry. We become so angry to the point that we become emotional. Because we've been denied the opportunity to tell the story of the victims.
Sorry, Mr. Klassen.
SA Rugby, the coach, and then sided with the alleged perpetrator. Now, that is immoral. You can't only allow the voice of a perpetrator, of an alleged perpetrator, but you deny the voice of victims who've been brutally assaulted. What is wrong in this country that we are not allowed the opportunity to speak out against racism? SA Rugby, at the moment, the Springboks are now ready to go onto the field. There's a player in their team that is not fit to be part of their team because of these serious allegations against him.
Mr. Klassen, are you seeing the other examples in the rest of the world and how Australia dealt with Israel Folau and his homophobic comments, and how Wales dealt with their assistant coach who was shrouded with allegations of misconduct regarding betting? Are you happy with how South African rugby's moral stand has been with regards to Eben Etzebeth? And what do you think should happen to Mr. Mark Alexander going forward?
The community of Langebaan last night in the meeting have spoken loudly and given us a mandate to call SA Rugby to Langebaan to come and apologize to the African and colored community for the way they have managed this whole saga. The people have mandated me to send an invitation to SA Rugby to come to Langebaan to listen to the victims and the community and to publicly apologize for the way they have treated this case. So we are not happy. In fact, we are calling on Mark Alexander to resign from his position because he has failed. In fact, the community last night said that he has failed the poor communities, rugby players, the complainants and the victims, because they clearly sided with the alleged perpetrator. They have been informed right from the start, the moment there was a complaint made after the incident. We sent emails, and I was in a telephone conversation with the president, Mr. Mark Alexander, asking him not to allow this player to go to Japan. They blatantly ignored us. They ignored the request. They were insensitive. And it seems that they who are told to represent us as the poor masses of this country in sport, it seems as if they are now being co-opted in a culture where white racism still exists in sport. Edwin Willems has become a victim of that. This even exhibit case is not the first racism case in rugby in South Africa. There's a history of a divided past in which black players like Apiwe Jantyi was immediately dealt with when it became clear or when there was evidence presented that he had misconducted himself in a way that he violated the rules and the policies of SA Rugby and the International Rugby Board. Now, why are SA Rugby eager to act quickly against black players who've been found on the wrong side of the law and the policies of SA Rugby? But when it comes to white players, they find the excuses and delaying tactics that divide us. Because what we want is justice. Because justice denied. Justice delayed.
Right. Now, finally, Mr. Klassen, the victims themselves, were they present at the meeting with the community last night? Yes. And were they the ones laying the charge, or were people laying charges on their behalf?
Right. Yeah. The victims, you see, because I can't lay a complaint, a criminal case against even Exhibit, because he has done nothing to me. So it is victims. It is a couple of ladies, young ladies, 20-year-old young ladies.
The ones who he allegedly pointed the gun at.
And then there's two men. The one guy, Mr. Andrew Wolfsmark, is an ex-rugby player. In fact, he was honored this year as a legendary player of the Langebaan Rugby Club. A reputable man in our of good standing in our community. So they have laid criminal charges. I have laid the complaint with the Human Rights Commission to say that you need to investigate hate speech and the racism content so that the word hot not becomes being treated equally as the K word. Because what we have found out is that white people can't use the K word anymore, because that word has been banned, it's illegal, and you can go to jail like that lady went to jail for 3 years now. Penny Sparrow, or what
Penny
is her
Sparrow,
name?
Yes.
Yeah. Now we want the H word, the hot not word, we want that word to be banned, scrapped, and declared illegal and unconstitutional. And it must become a criminal offense. Because it seems that white people are now using the H word, the hot not word, as a soft target, because they know they can't be criminally liable or accountable. But it has the same meaning. They use the word against colored people and dark-skinned African people. They use these discriminatory words to dehumanize us as a people.
Now, Mr. Klassen, last word. What do you expect Parliament to do? Because in previous cases, it's not unheard of that either the Minister of Sport or Parliament actually recall people from either tours. If you remember, the Springboks were almost recalled for their failure to put in Brayton Posa for an NDA tour back when I think it was the ANC Youth League demanded such, and it really made an impact in making sure that Brayton Posa was rightly included in the Springbok squad when he was excluded. This is one of those cases where one feels that the higher ups should intervene, the people with the real power in the country, such as Parliament. What do you expect Parliament to do about this situation?
Yeah. First of all, the Minister of Sport has an obligation towards the country, because he's the custodian of sport. He needs to ensure that our players and our rugby unions adhere to the Constitution. What does the Constitution say? You can't discriminate against people on the basis of color, race, creed, or whatever. You can't do it. So, there's a charge. There is two investigations. We are now at the court, magistrate court in Friedenburg, at the Equality Court, to proceed with the legal proceedings against Mr. Ivan Exhibit. The Minister of Sports has not said anything for the last 32 days. That is a shame. And we are calling on him to investigate, to launch an investigation and to recall and ask SA Rugby to recall even Etchebe. Because he's not the only lock and rugby player in South Africa.
Mm.
We've got a deep pool of talented players waiting to be selected. So we can't build our rugby around one man or one individual. So our constitution guarantees our freedoms that is enshrined in the Bill of Rights. Discrimination has no place in South Africa and in rugby. So we want the Minister of Sport to come out because he's been silent.
Mm.
And last night, the community in Langebaan also said that the Minister of Sport need to intervene into this matter.
All right.
We're very disappointed with the Portfolio Committee, who in a statement yesterday say that they are now concerned about even Elizabeth, who's being now embarrassed.
Embarrassed, yes.
Now, what about the victims? What kind of message is the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee sending out to colored people? That it is okay that you can be assaulted? Is it okay that you can be called names for boons?
Mm.
And it's okay when you are dehumanized, but when the K word are used, they are up in arms. What are they telling South Africa? Is it okay to continue with a culture of racism that divides people on the basis of whether you're human or whether you're subhuman? So the community of Langebaan last night took a resolution, and they've mandated me to publicly invite the Portfolio Committee of Sport to a community meeting in Langebaan so that they can meet the community and hear from the community themselves, because those communities have elected them to represent our aspirations and to defend our values system and this country.
Wonderful
so
stuff.
She and the Portfolio Committee must come to Langebaan, and she must also apologize for that statement, because
the portfolio
it seems that she's been influenced in a biased way.
Right. Thank you very much for your thoughts, Mr. Claassen. We have to end our conversation here, but we will definitely be looking further into this issue as it goes along. And we appreciate your time at the Sports Life Podcast.
Tune in to Cargumentative every Monday morning on Times Live Motoring. You can join myself, Thomas Faulkner, and my regular gang of automotive misfits as we discuss motoring news, views, and of course have a cargument or two. That's Cargumentative, only on Times Live Motoring.
To advertise on the Sports Live Podcast, email us at smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. Now I can't wait till I say this is the Sports Live Podcast, brought to you by, this is your name, your entity, your brand, right after the Sports Live Podcast. That's smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. Smith S, SMITHS at TISOBLACKSTAR.co.za. I am joined in studio by Pablo Urayai, who is a business developer for Peter de Villiers as well as the Peter de Villiers Foundation. Thanks for joining me, Pablo.
Good morning, sir. How are you? And thank you for having me.
I'm well. We've been in touch via text, but it's great to officially meet, and what a time to meet. And here we are faced with this situation in South African rugby where Eben Etzebeth has been accused of all sorts of things. And now, neither of us were actually in Langebaan when all these things happened, so we can't say as a matter of fact that he did it or he didn't do it. It's he said, she said.
Absolutely.
But on principle, is it right that Elizabeth is at the Rugby World Cup with the Springboks?
I've followed this thing quite closely, this incident, and I think, like you rightly point out, it is an allegation, and at this point we don't really know the true status of what's happened. But if we take a step back and unpack it and ask the right questions. Let's take out the color, let's take out the individuals and ask pertinent questions and assume that the scenario was true. was a crime committed, which would necessitate an investigation into the incident. You also have a situation.
This is regardless of black or white.
Do we have witnesses who have issued a statement?
Who have come under oath and submitted statements?
Mm. Yes, we do. Do we have an alleged perpetrator? Yes, we do. Now, if we put all this together, right, what are the next steps? Have the police followed the correct procedure? We don't know. What are the timelines? Right, we know for a fact, as alluded to by Sammy, who is the community leader and who has been on this from day one, that as far as they're concerned, something has happened. Now, are we saying that the burden of proof, because you have four individuals against one person,
right? Yeah,
is the burden of proof now higher? What are the next steps? So, in my view or my opinion, as limited as it is, that is what I would look at. Does it help that it's the Rugby World Cup season? It's unfortunate, but there'll always be people looking for a big story, and justice must be served if indeed these acts were perpetrated against the community of Langebaan.
Do you think SA Rugby is putting ahead their interests in the Springboks World Cup campaign over the interests of the country? I mean, the clearest example is the Wallaby fullback Israel Folau, and Folau didn't necessarily commit a crime. He wasn't criminally charged.
He was expressing an opinion.
He was expressing a religious opinion, but his right to expression also infringed on other people's rights to live and exist. And he I won't repeat what he said, but there were homophobic comments directed at people who said they're going to hell, repent now, bloody blah, bloody blah, and Rugby Australia had a code of conduct which they deemed that Israel Folau breached, right? And he was the best player. This is a guy that broke the Super Rugby try-scoring record of all time. And he had played... This is a very good player. I'm saying, like, in terms of World Cup spectacle, the World Cup is poorer without Israel Folau. No doubt. No doubt top three fullbacks in the world. No doubt a great player. But they took a stand and they said, okay, no, enough. We won't go to the World Cup. And Michael Checker, the head coach, understood. And this is a guy, he coached Folau 2013 when Waratahs won Super Rugby. Checker was a coach. Folau was a star player. Like, it would have pained him. It would have pained him to leave Folau behind. And take maybe guys that are of inferior quality, and I'm not saying that they are. I mean, but they've got Adam Ashley Cooper, who's long in the tooth now. But why can't SA Rugby be the ones to make a similar sort of stand where there is a criminal charge? We're talking about a criminal charge here. We're not talking about hearsay. If it was me and you debating it, that's something else. But the matter is sitting with the NPA. That shows a serious. That
means the gravity
under.
Of it.
Police investigation.
I think the first question we need to ask is, what is the procedure within SA Rugby in terms of the code of conduct to handle a situation like this? Do they have one? If they don't, I'll be very surprised. Secondly, we also have to take into serious consideration the climate in the country. We've had at least 30, 40 days of, I mean, September was a month of hell, literally. Violence against women, xenophobia.
The whole year.
The whole night. And then you decide to then go against the tide. I think that was very ill-advised. It's also important to take cognizance of the standards around the world. What would have been the right thing to do? I don't necessarily think that they did take the right position, but then again they'll probably be able to justify it, but then you have to then take cognizance of public sentiment that you probably have not made the right decision.
Right now, let me quickly read what Mark Alexander was quoted to having said in a story written by Liam.com, who is our group man in Japan at the moment. He wrote the story for Times Live. And it was on timeslive.co.za. But I'll just read the part where Mark Alexander, the president of SA Rugby, has been quoted. He says, "This is a matter between employer and employee. We can't just suspend a player. What if it transpires in a few weeks that the player is actually innocent?" He asks with a question mark. "He can take us to the cleaners. We have to protect the organization." What do you make of those comments?
Let's flip it on the other way.
What if he's guilty?
What if he's guilty? Will then SA Rugby be taken to the cleaners by the community of Langebaan? Mm. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think the prudent thing to do would have been to sit down with the community and say, let's understand what is going on. Let's unpack this.
Mm.
If he is indeed guilty this did actually happen, what is the way forward? But you can't then be one-sided. Yes, he's your employee, but couldn't have you have... I think the right thing to have done maybe would have to suspend him.
Mm, mm.
And until we get to a point of understanding what the truth of the matter is. Because these are really, really serious allegations.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that is where the problem is that you cannot be seen to be taking a back step in a situation like this. That is my view.
So it looks bad on the organization.
It looks bad on the organization. Were they prepared for it? They've had similar incidents before.
Mm.
They are examples around the world.
Yeah.
And they should have had the moral decency to take the right position.
Mm. Now, you're a representative of one man called Peter de Villiers, as well as his foundation. Very vocal character.
Absolutely.
And whatever you think of him, Peter de Villiers is a man that knows his rugby.
Mm-hmm.
There's a statement that he's released this morning.
No, it was released a while back.
Okay, one of the statements is released a while back. But he did say he won't support the Springboks during this Rugby World Cup
because of
South African rugby's stand in the Eben Etzebeth issue.
Absolutely.
Does he still feel that way?
Don't forget, Peter de Villiers is also a member of that community.
Mm.
And he needs to make a stand that he believes in.
Mm.
He strongly believes that... I mean, don't forget, he also comes from that background.
Mm.
He understands the system.
Mm.
He was the coach for the Springboks.
Mm.
And obviously, he's also putting it himself in that situation. What would he have done? I suspect he would have definitely suspended... a player
if he was in
Russ's shoes,
mm.
and let the law take its course.
Mm.
I think that would be, and that is his position,
mm.
And he's made it clear.
Yeah, and let me read an excerpt from that statement I was talking about. He says, "In my personal capacity, issues such as youth mentorship, community engagement, and speaking out about abuse of any form against women are a key focus of my non-profit foundation, which you've mentioned earlier, the Peter de Villiers Foundation. I believe in context is necessary in the light of the barrage of comments, mostly negative, that I have received following my way in on the Eben Etzebeth case. While as an individual, a man is innocent until proven guilty, when you represent any organization, the rules are slightly different. Whether you sweep the streets in the city of Cape Town, check passengers in at the airport, or don a national jersey, you are held to a higher standard and are accountable to the organization or the nation at large. And precedent is an important part of an organizational administrative practice. It is a tone on and off the pitch for the character and the caliber of player that represents a club and or country. And with that said, this defines to a certain degree the level of support and type of supporter you get, as players are often idolized by fans of all ages." This is a very well-written statement for Peter de Villiers. I have to say, this is not the Peter we used to see at press conferences, but he has made it clear that this is not just a reactionary callback Eben Etzebeth. This is a broad issue. You've spoken about femicide, women abuse that we're dealing with in the country, abuse in general. perpetrated by men in this country, and to have a Springbok, and that is a big deal. Yeah. Even if it was a Bafana player, Banyana player,
or as long as you're representing your country,
that's a huge deal. Yeah. You're representing the country internationally. You are no different to a diplomat, an ambassador, a high commissioner, a president. You're literally wearing the South African badge on your chest, right? Which is, you know, which is insane. It's an honor and it's a privilege and should be treated as such. And and Peter de Villiers' stand is that you can't, coming from that community, you can't support a team that's seen to be supporting someone that has been alleged to commit a crime, and B, a racial slur, and C, a crime against women, pointing a gun. This is a serious, serious, serious allegations. And what, in your conversations with Peter, what is it like for him? Is he seen as a leader in that community of Langebaan, in the community of the Western Cape, the Paarl regions? How do they view Peter de Villiers and how he's been treated in South African rugby?
Well, it's well documented. Things have not been going too well for him post his coaching stint with the Springboks. Like you said earlier on, irrespective of what you think of him, his record speaks for itself. He's one of the best coaches to have ever coached the Springboks in terms of his record. Yes, the community does look up to him. He does a lot for the community through his foundation. A lot of mentorship programs, coaching clinics, master classes. And he actually also contributes a lot of his own, whatever fees he gets, to his local church. So these are things he does. He would love to be able to do more. And what our role is business development and management is to try and secure jobs, look out for opportunities. And it has been hard. It has been really, really hard. He's also well aware of the situation of his daughter, who unfortunately has had a relapse in her cancer.
Oh, that's unfortunate. So sorry to hear.
Yeah, actually, she's in hospital as we speak. So it's been difficult. It has been really, really difficult. But he soldiers on.
It has. And one of the high-profile cases that was the job at the Southern Kings.
That's correct.
A lot of people felt that.
Yes, it was his.
If he is on the shortlist, which... Yeah. The shortlist is the shortlist. Whoever put it together, fine. Nobody wants to interfere with that process. But if he is on the shortlist and everybody looks at the shortlist and says, wait a minute, he's the best candidate here, surely, right? And then he doesn't get the job. Not to say that anyone's entitled to the job, but it doesn't take anyone to you know, anyone clever or an Einstein or a rocket scientist to figure out that he was the best candidate. So what happened there? Why was he not in the job to the point where they would rather not have an appointment at all, that to show that in fact there was no better candidate? We will rather, you know, take someone out of position who was from management and have him coach the team.
That was very interesting situation, and also just demonstrates the levels at which people will go to, in my view, to keep Peter de Villiers away from doing what he loves, which is coaching rugby. In that incident, we basically got a heads up of an opportunity. We submitted his profile, and he was shortlisted. Don't forget, this is it was open to the public in terms of the coaches.
Right.
And we duly submitted, and he was shortlisted. And don't forget, the key element here was also transformation. Transformation was a big, big part in terms of recruitment. Who best than Peter de Villiers? If you're really, as a club, are talking about transformation, who else in terms of your shortlist are you going to bring?
And he was going to rally that...
Absolutely.
PE community, Nelson Mandela Bay community, and surrounding Eastern Cape and Southwestern District.
Exactly. So let's look at the shortlist. Who were the other three candidates? Is what I'm saying.
You know, there's the Jackson first. Steve Jackson,
yes.
Coach of Samoa. Samoa have been poor at the World Cup.
Yep.
Cornel Fancel, who I'd never heard of. Right. I swear to you, I'd never heard of before this shortlist. I thought it was Corne Fancel, and it turns out it was Cornel. He used to play for the Cheetahs. Now he's a forwards coach. I know a coach that used to coach at the Cheetahs, who actually has been on this podcast before, and he said Cornel came behind him in the coaching ranks at the Cheetahs and was suddenly fast-tracked to coach in the first team. And this guy's never coached in the first, I'm talking Super Rugby,
right,
seniors. So he got fast-tracked there, and then suddenly he's shortlisted at the Kings. Okay, and then who was the I think there was a third candidate.
I think he pulled out, if I remember correctly.
Yes. That was Rory Duncan. Exactly. He was the coach of Worcester Warriors. Worcester Warriors just nicked a relegation fight, like to the last game. Even then, Worcester were happy to let him go. That, you know, so like the signs were there that look. You're fighting against nobody's, so to speak, as they say in boxing. So
I think it was a no-brainer. If you go back to also the beginning of it, you understand that also there was opposition from the board at the Kings itself for Nick Mallett to be a part of that interview panel. Now, how do you have Nick Mallett interviewing Peter de Villiers?
They have a history.
They have a history, and not necessarily that, but I think you, Peter de Villiers is not a person you interview. Peter de Villiers is a person you headhunt, in my view.
Yeah, exactly. That's he's a springboard. At the end of the day, he will always be a springboard coach, no matter what you think. And you know what? He wasn't the worst springboard coach as we've come to learn.
And also, don't forget that now the position that the Kings have taken is that they have now aborted the interview process.
Indefinitely.
Yeah. We have not been notified officially by them, but we have requested that it hasn't come through. So we're not sure at this point whether he's still in the runnings or not, or are they waiting for the guy in the World Cup to finish it, wrap up and come back. Then you have a high performance coach, I think, who is now the caretaker coach. So it just doesn't look well for rugby generally. Then you have the box incident. Then people are not stupid. Yeah, people then begin to see and realize and understand that, listen, what is it that is going wrong in rugby? What is this institutionalism we're fighting against? Right? You talk transformation, nothing happens. If he didn't perform well in the interview, let us know.
So they didn't even give that
feedback. That's what I'm saying. We haven't had an official feedback to say, thank you very much, but we're no longer...
Jeepers.
All we had is a statement released in the newspaper.
So no direct communication.
No direct communication, which is unfortunate. Yeah. So it doesn't look good for South African rugby right now. Across the board.
Across the board, mate. Across the board. Yeah. All right. I have to pause our conversation here, or stop our conversation here. It's been a fascinating chat. I am looking forward to chatting to you some more.
Most definitely.
This is an open forum. Everyone is always welcome to air their views. All right, that was our chat with Pablo Urayai.
That's correct.
I need to get used to this name, Pablo Urayai. I'll practice it a few times in my sleep. Don't worry about it.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure. Appreciate it.
All right. Cheers, bud.
Cheers.
That's it for me, Sboom Chigeliso, and you've been listening to the Sports Live podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Do also catch us on timeslive.co.za, as well as Sowetan Live, Business Live. We are also on Iono FM, the Apple Podcast Store, or wherever you get your podcasts. It could be Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, PocketCast, wherever. To connect with us, please use the hashtag SportsLive. Share your comments with us at TimesLive or at Sowetan Live on Twitter. A big thank you goes out to the Multimedia Live team led by Scott Peter Smith and producer Paige Muller, as well as the Tiso Black Star Digital Sports Department headed by Mninawa Mchana Ntloko. Our sound and audio mixer is Innocent Manyike. From us at the Sports Live podcast, it's goodbye for now.